From National Public Radio, it's Latino USA. The March 4th primary may not be Super Tuesday, but in Texas, it may well be Tejano Tuesday.
The Latino electorate in Texas has reached population threshold where the Latino vote could be the deciding vote in Texas.
And for Senator Clinton, the conventional wisdom has been that Latinos will vote for her.
The first time I ever came to Laredo, I came nearly 36 years ago to help register voters all across the border.
But the Obama campaign is working hard to change that and quickly narrowing Clinton's once commanding lead.
Viva Obama! Viva Obama! Familias unidas seguras!
This week, primary politics and the Latino vote in Texas, and the Afro-Peruvian beat of Peru Negro. Coming up on Latino USA, I'm Maria Hinojosa. No se vayan. Officially, Cuba has its first new leader since 1959. Joining us to discuss this and other news of the week is Univision's national news anchor, Maria Elena Salinas. So, Maria Elena, Cuba's Communist Parliament chose Raúl Castro as the new leader of the island. Now, officially, his title is president, but the people don't elect him. You and I talked about this change briefly last week. Now that it's official, though, people continue to speculate about the possibility of changes on the island. What do you see in terms of Cuba's near-term and far-term future in terms of any changes?
There is a lot of speculation and people wondering what's going to come about. For now, it's pretty much expected to be business as usual. You know, let's remember that Raúl Castro has been at the helm of the Cuban government since July of 2006. Fidel's resignation was just a formality that left him in office. Most Cuba observers would agree that if Fidel is alive and well, as he claims to be, because, you know, there are those who say that this is all a front and that he's really dead, but let's say that he is alive and well, he continues to be consulted for most decisions. So right now it's more of the same. Some people are beginning to interpret, for example, the recent visit of the envoy from the Vatican to be a sign of some kind of an opening because Raúl Castro met with him, something that Fidel would not do unless it was the Pope himself. You know, it's ironic because it was Raúl who, since the beginning of the revolution, was the communist ideologue who suggested to Fidel to reach out to the Soviet Union. But now he's being seen by some people as the reformer. Some of the things that are expected of him is to try to make some economic reforms and follow the China model, and also to reach out to the U.S., which is something that he has already started to do.
Fascinating, Maria Elena. Let's talk a little bit about politics in this country. We're seeing this interesting balancing act from the Democratic presidential candidates, this relating to the issue of NAFTA. This, of course, just as the Texas and Ohio primaries are going to take place. So what's going on here in terms of these candidates and NAFTA, and why has it become such a flashpoint?
Right now, everything is very delicate for both of them. You know, there's so much at stake. It's very difficult for them to campaign for primaries in two states that have opposing points of view on the same issue. And this is what is happening leading up to the March 4th primaries in Texas and Ohio, you know, more so than in Rhode Island and Vermont. When it comes to NAFTA, the free trade agreement, voters in Ohio are against it. They feel that it's taken jobs away from them. But in Texas, it's the opposite. They feel that it's helped their economy. So that's where this balancing act comes from. And it was very evident during the last debate in Ohio. So, you know, Hillary Clinton, who supported NAFTA in the past, now says that she'd be willing to renegotiate NAFTA with Mexico and Canada and strengthen labor standards and environmental standards. And Obama basically agrees with her. While that might be sounding good to Ohio voters, they have to be very careful with not sounding like they oppose NAFTA completely, because then it's going to hurt them in Texas. So this is a really delicate issue, and they have to really measure their words when they talk about it.
Maria Elena, another very delicate issue is the one of hostages being held in Colombia. The rebels associated with the FARC have captured and held prisoners for years, including the 2002 presidential candidate. Her name is Ingrid Betancourt. This week, four prisoners were released by the FARC. They said that Betancourt is very ill. Maria Elena, such a sad story. What can you tell us about this?
Well, you know, Maria, this is another four hostages that were released in Colombia. This is another deal brokered by Hugo Chavez, the president of Venezuela. They had been held for 6 years. When they talked about Ingrid Betancourt, you know, she is the most high-profile hostage being held by the FARC, like you mentioned, from 2002. They said that they're concerned for her well-being, One of them said that she looked ill, that she looked weak and frail, and she was being mistreated by the rebels who were guarding her, that she's being kept chained most of the time. It's difficult to see what's happening with her, but there has been stepped up efforts by the French government to negotiate her release. She has two children. Her children are living in France. She is half French. But for right now, what the rebels said after the release of the last four hostages is that there will be no more release of hostages. But if she is as weak and as sick as they say she is, you know, the pressure could mount on the rebels. And you never know. It could be that Hugo Chavez wants to, you know, become the hero in this case, and maybe he will be able to get her release. If anyone can, it would probably be him.
Well, as a mom, I hope she gets released real soon. I'm sure you feel the same way. Thanks for joining us, Maria Elena.
Thank you, Maria. Take care.
Maria Elena Salinas is a syndicated columnist and national news anchor for Univision, the Spanish-language television network. You're listening to Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa. The eyes of Texas and of the nation will be on the presidential candidates this March 4th, and the Democratic contenders are looking to Tejanos to help put them over the top. Latino USA sent our reporters to check in with the campaigns. We have two stories, beginning with Yvette Benavides, who is following the Clinton campaign.
For the last several weeks, the San Antonio Hillary for President campaign headquarters has been a hive of activity. There are late-night phone banks, block walks, and appearances by celebrities, like America Ferrera.
And when someone asks me why I support Hillary, as a citizen of this country, I do not want to blindly believe that someone is going to be a better person than their counterparts. Give me the proof. And Hillary has given us the proof that she is so
The star of ABC's hit comedy Ugly Betty spoke to local Hillary supporters just as she's done across the nation for the New York senator. And the Clinton campaign is thrilled to have her because Ferrera is young, hip, and Latina.
This is our future. This is their future. And it's time to get out and say, you know, we're ready for a president who's going to be a voice for us. So thank you.
Latino voters helped carry Senator Clinton to victory in California's primary, and she's hoping Tejanos will do the same for her in the crucial March 4th primary. And to boost her appeal, she's rounded up the endorsements of influential Texas Latino leaders like Henry Cisneros, the popular former mayor of San Antonio and HUD secretary during the Clinton administration.
This lady is ready to be president. Our country needs Hillary Clinton on education, on health care, on getting our troops out of Iraq. Now,
Clinton has also brought in nationally recognized Latino leaders like Dolores Huerta and Los Angeles Mayor Antonio Villaraigosa. Villaraigosa says the reason that Clinton has such strong support with the Latino community is because they remember what life was like when Bill Clinton was president.
They remember low deficits and high surpluses. They remember the administration when they created 22 million new jobs, when working families were doing better than they had done at any time in a generation.
Villaraigosa says that Latinos are not rejecting Obama as much as they're embracing Clinton. He says over many decades, she has proven her loyalty to Latinos. And that's something Clinton likes to remind the voters about when she campaigns, like when she stumped recently in Laredo, Texas.
The first time I ever came to Laredo, I came nearly 36 years ago to help register voters all across the border up to San Antonio because I at that time knew how important it was for everybody eligible to vote to actually go and vote.
Henry Flores, a political scientist at St. Mary's University in San Antonio, says there's an unspoken issue of why Latinos favor Clinton. He says they're making a play to become the new golden minority, the minority that could have an advantage when it comes to getting high-ranking government appointments and more.
The Latino electorate in Texas has reached threshold, a population threshold, where they can be the deciding vote in a very close election. If the white Democrats and the white Republicans split, or there's just a 5% difference between the two, the Latino vote could be the deciding vote in Texas.
However, at the end of the day, on March 4th, it's going to be about the delegates. And districts with large Latino constituencies simply don't have many to offer. That's because the delegates are divided according to voter turnout in the last general election per state Senate district.
So Hillary could win big, for instance, in West Texas and only get 8 delegates, and lose marginally in East Texas, where there's 36 delegates, and lose all 36, even though she might lose by 1 percentage point population-wise. Texas is very weird that way.
Texas is so weird that it's possible that Clinton could win big with Latinos, dominate the state's popular vote, and then still come up short with Texas delegates, a situation the Clinton camp is clearly trying to avoid. For Latino USA, I'm Yvette Benavides in San Antonio, Texas.
I'm Matt Largy following the Obama campaign in Austin, Texas. Volunteers are hammering campaign signs to the side of this small house on Austin's east side. It's a largely Latino and African American neighborhood. A diverse crowd is gathered for the opening of this local Barack Obama campaign headquarters. Folks here say they've never seen this kind of presence from someone running for president, and they say it feels good.
The big feeling out here is, like, before you always heard that Latinos matter, you know, it's a group of the population, everybody's going for it. But I have never experienced it to the degree where Latino community was such a coveted group.
Rich DePalma is supporting Barack Obama. He's looking forward to, as he puts it, turning the page on the political dynasties of the last 20 years. He doesn't want to see the White House occupied by just two families, Bush and Clinton.
Obama, for me, has been all-inclusive. It hasn't been about an African-American running. It's been about a male running. It's about American running.
Latinos like DePalma are prized by the Obama campaign, not only because Latinos represent a quarter of Texas voters, but also because the Latino vote seems to be splitting along generational lines. Jim Henson directs the Texas Politics Project at the University of Texas at Austin.
I think there are young voters that are responding to, you know, the tone of his appeal, that are responding to him personally, that don't see that many policy differences between he and Hillary Clinton. And so go for the candidate that is more magnetic, that also seems to take a more sort of measured approach to politics.
The issues do come into play for Latinos supporting Obama that I spoke with.
He had objected to the occupation of Iraq before we even went to war.
It's a stance on health care.
He's taking no money from lobbyists and big corporations.
Immigration reform and education are also high on the list. But it seems more than anything, many Latinos connect with his story. Pete Gallego represents more than a dozen West Texas counties in the state legislature. He's also endorsed Obama.
Senator Obama's life story really, I think, resonates with the Latino community. I mean, the son of immigrants, very humble roots, humble beginnings. The rise from those humble roots to where he is now is a story that speaks to the hearts of Latino community. We can relate to that.
People working independently of the campaign have also been inspired to get the message out. This video, making the rounds on the internet for the past 2 weeks, was paid for out of pocket by an Obama supporter in California. The song talks about Obama's humble roots, and the video shows working class Latinos shouting the chorus, "Viva Obama."
Viva Obama! Viva Obama! Viva! Familias unidas, seguras, y hasta con plan de salud.
Polls indicate the Obama campaign's efforts are paying off. While Senator Clinton still holds a lead among Latino voters, Obama's poll numbers are improving daily. Latinos of all ages propelled Clinton to victory in other big states, but the Texas primary is shaping up to buck that trend. Again, Jim Henson from the Texas Politics Project.
The big question here, you know, really is, to the extent that Latinos are breaking for Obama, you know, how many will turn out to vote and how big a tide will that be for Obama? But it seems to me that it's almost certainly complicates the Clinton strategy.
For Latino USA, I'm Matt Largy in Austin, Texas.
Now, many Tejanos have long ties with the Republicans, and they could prove to be an important group for the GOP as well. Marketing consultant Lionel Sosa is a pioneer of Latino Republican politics. Sosa has worked with the Reagan and both Bush administrations. Lionel Sosa now joins us from his art gallery in downtown San Antonio. Lionel, you have been a prominent critic of the kind of language that's coming out of the GOP in terms of the issue of immigration. You've basically said that that kind of language is going to cost the party Latino support, not just now, but perhaps for decades to come. You are now getting behind the McCain candidacy. So has the immigration rhetoric calmed to the point where you believe that Latino Republicans are going to follow your lead and stand behind a Republican candidate like McCain?
Well, you know, I think that hardline rhetoric did hurt the Republican candidate, but as individuals. Tancredo was the first to tank, and then Giuliani, and then Romney, and they were all hardline against immigration. But John McCain never was. He's been very outspoken on the need for immigration reform right from the beginning. He's been more outspoken than Hillary or Obama. And he has followed his heart, and he's done it from the beginning, and he's never backed off.
But honestly, do you think it may just be too late for many Latino Republicans who have perhaps, you know, and I've spoken with them, and they've said, we voted Republican in the past, we will not do it now, we are angry with the tone that the party has taken on this issue. Is it too late?
You know, that's a really big myth about Latinos having become more and more Republican in 2000 and 2004. They just happened to vote for the person who knew the Latino best and did the best job in communicating, and that was George W. Bush. Gore did not have any Latino outreach, spent virtually nothing in 2000, and he lost the election because of that. In Florida, Bush won by a little over 500 votes, but the untold story is that he got 6,000 more Latino votes than Gore. But it is because we as Latinos are not any kind of voter bloc. We will look at the individual before we look at the party.
This sense, though, Lionel, that people are feeling in general in this country, that it's a time for change. How does your candidate deal with drastic change versus him being part of a party that's been in power for the past 8 years?
This year, America is making up their mind much more on true character than on answers that seemed rehearsed or on gestures that seem robotic or on answers and solutions that seem to follow what focus groups and research is saying. It's going to be a tight race, and who knows who will win. But in either case, it will make history because the first African-American or the first woman would be elected or the oldest man to ever serve as president. So it'll make history no matter who of the three wins.
Lionel Sosa, thank you so much for joining us on Latino USA.
Thank you, Maria.
Lionel Sosa is a marketing consultant and the founder of the online think tank Mexicans and Americans Thinking Together. That's MAT.org. In a minute, the ambassadors of Afro-Peruvian music and dance, the pioneering ensemble and dance troupe Perú Negro, coming up on Latino USA. Stay with us. Listening to Latino USA, I'm Maria Hinojosa.
Luz para tus ojos. In Peru, the instrument that's most associated with traditional music is the zampoña, or panpipes. The zampoña produces a sound that mimics the high, airy spaces of the Andes Mountains. But for every mountain, there is a valley, or, as in the case of Peru, a coastline. And it's on the Peruvian coast that another kind of traditional music was born, this one from the descendants of slaves. You're listening to the music of the Afro-Peruvian ensemble Perú Negro, formed 30 years ago by Rolando Campos de la Colina to preserve Peru's rich African heritage. The backbone of Perú Negro's sound is African drums and percussion, what master percussionist Bobby Sanabria termed in a recent interview here on Latino USA, the low tonal center of gravity. Joining me to talk about Perú Negro and the African presence in Peru is the producer of Perú Negro's latest album, Samba Malato, Juan Murillo. Welcome, Juan Murillo, to Latino USA.
Thank you. Happy to be with you.
You know, most people think of Peru, and they think of the Andes, and they think of the Incas, and they think of a strong indigenous population, which exists. But they probably don't immediately think of an African presence in Peru.
Strangely enough, at the setting of Lima as a city, at the founding of Lima, you know, 30 years later, there were more blacks than whites. And that's because having black servants was a sign of social status.
So about what years are we talking about? When was this African presence in Peru kind of solidified?
Well, this is at the setting of Lima as a city. So it's at the end of the 1600s. And then after that, you know, slavery spreads to the south into the areas of agriculture. And that's where the rest of the population was taken over. And then Lima just spread out into a bigger city, and the African population there diminished in numbers.
Now, because I've been to Peru, which I absolutely love, in fact, one of my greatest dreams is to get back to Peru soon. And so I've seen a lot of these instruments that people listening may pick up that these are very unique sounding instruments, but they also look incredibly unique. For example, the cajon, which is essentially a crate, a wooden box.
Yes. Well, originally that's what it was. It was just a crate, a packing crate. And today it's, you know, it's an instrument made by craftsmen, so it's a professional instrument now.
And on the CD, I mean, you've got the cajon with essentially carrying much of the rhythm throughout many of these songs.
Yeah, I call the cajon the timekeeper and the soul keeper of Afro-Peruvian music.
The title cut of the CD, Samba Malato, it's a kind of rhythm called a lando. And maybe you can tell our listeners what a lando is. And talk a little bit about the song, Samba Malato, the title of it and what inspired the lyrics.
The lando is, I would say, a soulful and sensuous genre of Afro-Peruvian music. In the old days, you know, the old landos were kind of like the old blues. They talk about the evils of discrimination and segregation or slavery. The landos of today are different. You know, the thematic of the lyrics usually have to do with, you know, failed loves or, you know, deceptions in life. The song in the CD, Samba Malato, it's a collection of old chants that black women used to do as they performed their chores. And Samba Malato itself is a chant, so in the song it becomes a chorus. What the dance depicts of this particular song is laundresses going to take care of their duties. And then all of a sudden assembling into this choreography in which they chant this, you know, samba maratón.
Well, thanks so much for joining us on Latino USA, Juan.
Thank you.
Juan Morillo is producer of the Grammy-nominated ensemble and dance troupe Perú Negro. For more information about their U.S. tour, go to perunegro.org. And now it's time for a little story from Mi Vida. I got lost in San Francisco this week. I ended up in Chinatown, and for a moment there I got disoriented, and I couldn't understand anything or anyone. I knew I would find my bearings, but it made me think about language and how you can feel lost when you don't understand what people are saying around you, which got me thinking about bilingualism in this country and about the recent CNN and Univision debate. I sent a little note to Jorge Ramos, the Univision anchor, who was asking questions to the two Democrats. One question, even in Spanish. So I said, Órale, Jorge, gracias por haber hecho el debate bilingüe. I was congratulating him for making the debate bilingual on the same network where Lou Dobbs attacks undocumented immigrants and Latinos for speaking Spanish. Now, in that same CNN-Univision debate, Hillary Clinton said it would be nice if more people could learn more than one language in this country. But I know that changing languages is hard. When I was growing up, none of my Mexican cousins really wanted to learn English. They were forced to take it in school, but they didn't really care. They looked down on learning English. They told me they liked Spanish just fine. But now, all of my cousins' kids in Mexico, they know English, and they've become fully bilingual, like much of Mexico. Learning English is seen less as a threat in Mexico now. It's a necessity, which has been absorbed without a lot of drama. I love languages, but I'm just as frustrated as anyone else when I don't understand what people are saying around me. I get it. I really do. But the world is changing, and so must we all. So my son, Raúl Ariel, is learning French, but really wants to learn Japanese so he can understand the cartoons he likes to watch. And me? Well, the language I would really like to learn is Chinese. It might be smart for Americans to start thinking about breaking the mold. Forget about bilingualism. Let's embrace trilingualism. Órale, xie xie, zai qian, thank you, and goodbye. Production support for Latino USA comes from KUT Radio, the Center for Mexican American Studies, UT Austin, and the William and Salome Scanlon Foundation of Austin and San Antonio. We had help this week from KQED and Tom Krentowski in San Francisco, Ernie Villarreal, and Texas Public Radio. To listen to us online or to contact us, go to latinousa.org. I'm Maria Hinojosa. Join us again next week for NPR's Latino USA.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations and Walden University. Graduate degrees online for professionals who strive to make a difference. Walden University. A higher degree, a higher purpose. WaldenU.edu. The Doris Duke Charitable Foundation. Celebrating 10 years of support for the performing arts, environmental conservation, medical research, and the prevention of child abuse. And Lumber Liquidators. Hardwood, bamboo, and cork flooring. Catalog at lumberliquidators.com. This is NPR, National Public Radio.